I think there's two parts of it that are really important for me. And I think for us at Tableau, the first one is how can agentic analytics make the analytics experience really better for everyone in the organization?
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of Bark, and my guest today is Nate Nichols. He's head of agentic analytics at Salesforce. And we will discuss the evolving landscape of AI, particularly focusing on the autonomy of AI engines. We look at how they can be deployed in customer service, but of course, especially also in analytics. We highlight how important it is to embed analytics in everyday tasks, but also the importance of the semantic layer to enhance AI capabilities. We end with a look into the future. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Nate. Great to have you on the Data Culture Podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Carsten. It's great to be here. Hi, everybody. We're watching and listening.
Nate, you are an expert in agentic AI. You did a lot of work in that area, and that's why I thought this is a great topic for us, because it's obviously the hot topic of the year, I would say, 2025. One of the big topics. I see a lot of vendors talking about it. There seems to be a little bit almost like a competition. How many agents do I have? And also the user companies are starting to pick it up. Yeah, we see first examples of companies doing something here. So I think it's a super hot and super interesting topic. Before we dive into the details, maybe you could give us, let's say, your definition or your view on what is agentic AI?
Yeah, it's a great question. And anybody who tells you this is the real definition for agentic AI is they don't know either. Like we're all kind of figuring this out. So it's at this point, it can feel kind of vibesy about what counts as agentic. And there's this kind of, you know, Nick, you mentioned the vendors, there's a lot of people like, that's not agentic, like we're agentic. And there's that kind of space. But essentially it's, you know, it's based on generative AI. There's large language models at the core of it. So all the work happening with, you know, ChatGPT and Gemini from Google and everything else, that all benefits agentic AI. But the shift that, you know, when we first started with like ChatGPT, I think that was a lot of people's first experience with large language models. And it's a conversational interface. It responds very quickly. And that kind of set up like the world of co-pilots, which we had for like a year, you know, and that was, hey, you would give it a task and it would do that task and come right back to you. And that's good for a lot of things. And there, you know, it'll help you create a function that you don't know how to code, but you can describe what the function should do. It can do that for you. And that's great. That's now we're able to move past that with agentic AI. And the big shift with agents and agentic AI is that they have more autonomy and they have more, kind of space to do things on their own. And so instead of giving it like a task or a command that you want it to do, it's closer to you give it an intent. Like, here is the thing I want. I want a report that summarizes key industries and trends going on with that. Or I want some groceries, or I want sort of more of a goal or an intent you have. And then the new piece with agentic AI is the agent, the AI can plan, it can decide how it's going to do that. And then it can actually execute steps in the real world. So that could be, you know, hitting APIs. Eventually it'll be, you know, driving the robot or driving the car, like real world stuff. But yeah, basically it's more autonomous and it's able to do kind of higher level things on its own. That's the shift we're seeing with agentic AI, but it's still built on top of large language models and generative AI at the core of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, the big breakthrough for Gen AI was when it got easy, yeah? When we got the ChatGPT. And where do you see agentic AI in terms of ease of use? I mean, we see now frameworks coming up and things like that, but I don't think it's at the same level yet, is it?
No, I mean, the easiest agent I've seen is operators from OpenAI. So they, mm-hmm. and I think maybe Gemini came out with one too. Of course, it's moving so quickly. As soon as one of them releases it, everybody else is there 2 weeks later. But like the operator AI is exactly, you can give it higher level, and this is on ChatGPT, and you can try it, but you can give it like, hey, I want to book a flight to California in the spring, kind of go figure it out. And under the covers, it's going to different websites and it's reading the websites and it's doing that kind of work for you. That's the easiest like way to try an agent that I've seen. You mentioned the libraries, and there's a ton of frameworks. And, you know, if you can code a little bit and you're interested in this stuff, you can go stand up an agent pretty quickly, expose Python functions to it, that kind of stuff. That's awesome. Everybody who's interested in the space should go do that and start seeing what it, you know, how you think about giving action, making actions available to the agent so it can do things. And the challenge that we've seen with those kinds of, you know, there's like a lot of open source libraries and stuff around it. They're awesome. Everybody should try them out and play with them. The big challenge we've seen with agents is, how do you take that kind of hackathon or something you build in a weekend and you can kind of get a hello world agent up and running? That's awesome. How do you make that work at enterprise scale is a huge lift, because now you need to monitor the agents. So you need to see how often they're running and how often they're getting thumbs up or thumbs down in the responses, and how much each of those responses is costing you. There's all, and you got security and governance models. There's all kinds of stuff that has to come to, when you think about going from like getting a demo or sort of POC agent to actually scaling that for the enterprise. That at Salesforce, we have Agentforce, that is our enterprise grade agent platform, that where we're taking care of all that kind of stuff that makes it hard to do really at scale. There's monitoring and transparency and that kind of stuff. And so we've done a lot of work there to make agents easy to build. But for just somebody at home listening, it's things like ChatGPT operator is the quickest way to kind of see it up and running and to start to experiment with it. You mentioned 2025 is going to be the year of agents. I totally agree. And Salesforce agrees, and we're doing our part to make that happen. Everybody else is as well. So you'll get a lot of chances to play with agents this year. I just saw Alexa Plus. I think they announced a couple of days ago. It's more agentic. You can give it commands, and again, it's going off and doing a bunch of work before it comes back to you. So there will be a lot of chances to sort of get your feet wet with agents this year. It'll be an exciting year for agents for sure.
Maybe you have some examples for us, or let's take the customer facing processes, you know, that are obviously close to your daily work, probably. Are there like, areas where you see already that's maybe a hotspot where a lot of agents are being used or can generate a lot of value, or is it across the board? Maybe you can, or maybe you also have some examples for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, there are. And you mentioned that service example. That's really the home run case for agents, because it's such a common use. Every industry has, every company has service agents, and I get mixed up sometimes because they're called service agents, but they're people. And when I usually say agents, I mean AI agents. But so yeah, there's a ton of that, and I can speak. So that's kind of where everybody's mind goes first. And it's a great use case for that, especially as you can do more of the grounding that's necessary. So it's not just, you know, you can go to OpenAI and say, how do I return a package? And it'll give you some generic answer. But if you're a shipping company, you don't want to give a generic answer. You want to say, here, go to this website, or I'll fill out the flow for you. And like, you know, you have a lot of specifics that you need the agent to be able to express. So the service agent is like a home run use case. For just a couple things that I know of from being at Salesforce, one is like we're partnered with Remarkable as one of our customers, who makes those awesome e-ink, you know, sort of pseudo paper tablets. I think they've been able to divert something like 90% of their service requests can now be handled by an agent, by our service agent, but by an agent importantly. And so for them, it's really a nice frontline defense where people come in with, you know, the kind of simple questions like, oh, it won't turn on, what do I do about it? And the kind of stuff that used to be in FAQs and different resources like that. Now the agent can answer with all that. It can be grounded in that. And then if it, you know, there are cases the agent can't handle, and then it escalates to a human. And it's nice because the human has all the context. They know the conversation. They know what the agent's tried already and how the person's been responding. And so now when the human agent comes in, they're really able to add the unique value that they can provide and not spend their time, you know, here's the FAQ on that, or here's the form for returning shipping things. And so that that kind of case is really common, where it's, hey, let the agent handle like the standard stuff, that 80% that takes up a ton of people's time. is really low value work, is repetitive for the people doing it. Let the agent take that on and then keep the people for the good stuff. So we're seeing now customers like Remarkable. We have that. We're doing a similar thing at help.salesforce.com. We've had that site for a long time. Now it's powered by our agents. It'll answer your questions for you. Ground, it's no longer just like a search box to search our documentation. You can come in and get answers based on that documentation. And we're seeing similarly like very large deferral rates of, hey, we don't have to, people find what they're looking for. They don't have to actually talk to a sales rep or somebody. They can get the answers they need because the agent does such a better job answering than we've been able to do before.
Mm-hmm. What's the most advanced agents you have ever seen? What did really impress you or what was really peculiar?
So I think it might be robots. I've been kind of cool on robots myself because it always just seemed like it's just so far off. But I don't know if you, there's a company called Humanoid. There's a couple of these companies that are really doing like amazing robotics work, and it's similarly agentic, and it's, there was a really cool demo where I saw these two robots working together to like unpack a grocery bag. And that's like, you know, like people have been trying to do robots in the home, and it's always like, you can have like a robot vacuum cleaner or something, but like the hassle is stuff like getting groceries out of the car, or like, you know, unpacking your kids' backpacks and getting the lunch bags back out. It's all this stuff that's like, it's kind of mindless, but you have to have such dexterity, you know, and it's always felt so far-fetched. And then you see these robots and they're agents, and it's especially apparent because they're actually embodied, you know, and they feel like an agent, like a thing doing things in the world. But it's super impressive. And I think the voice capabilities of, if you've tried chatting with ChatGPT, it's amazing how well it works. And that came way faster than I thought it would.
Yep.
The vision and image capabilities came way faster. I mean, this is all coming way faster than I thought it would, but the robots are the next thing that's like, wow, I thought that was a 2070 thing, not a 2025 thing, you know? It's amazing how quickly these things are developing and how well they build on top of each other, where it's this, you know, it's, you're able to go from ChatGPT in 2021 to like robots that walk around and talk in 2025 and like 4 years. It's like, that's amazing. Yep. But it's because they're all using the same technology, and it ladders up so nicely.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's really impressive. So when let's say software and hardware comes together in a way.
You start to think like, what is this world going to be like?
Exactly. Yeah. So science fiction movies becoming real.
Yep.
More quickly than we thought, yeah, for sure. Let's go back to the agentic AI, and let's narrow it down a little bit, because obviously the Data Culture podcast has a lot of listeners and viewers in the data space. And now my question to you is, what do you see agentic AI doing to data and analytics? What are the changes we can expect here from that technology?
Yeah, so this is like what I work on all day long. So I'll try to not just ramble, but I think there's two parts of it that are really important for me. And I think for us at Tableau, the first one is how can agentic analytics make the analytics experience really better for everyone in the organization? And this starts with, if you're you're prepping for a meeting and you want to know what customer growth has looked like and for health and life sciences in the West Coast, you open up Slack or you open up Salesforce, you open up anywhere, you fire off that question, an agent gets it, it can understand what you mean, it can find the right data to answer it, it can do analysis, it can answer in natural language, it can include a visualization, it can attach recommended actions, all of that kind of stuff. Like starting with kind of, you know, more quantitative questions, I would say. And that'll keep scaling up as the underlying foundational models continue to improve, as the reasoning and, you know, DeepSeek and deep research, that whole kind of model of there's more internal thinking, all of that kind of work improves like the agent's ability to do that, which to do the analytics, which means we'll be able to serve kind of higher and higher value analytics. And so, you know, this year it'll be like, hey, you can fire off these questions. You get back an answer you trust with an explanation and justification and visualizations. And as this year keeps going and into next year, it'll be more to like, the questions you can ask would be like, how do I optimize my marketing spend? And that's not a question you answer with a SQL query. That's not a question you answer in a half second. That's, you want the agent to go off and like do some work, and it's going to do, some of that's going to be on your data. Some of that's going to be looking at competitors. Some of that's going to be looking at macro trends of, you know, TikTok versus Meta investment over the industry. It's going to go away for a while and then come back to you with some really rich and data-based recommendations for you. And we're kind of, we're like on the path to doing that. And we'll keep, as everything keeps maturing, we'll keep moving up the stack of like the higher level value of the analytics that we can provide to the business users, the people that are actually trying to use the analytics to do it, to do their job. And so there's a lot there we can do with how the agent can help with analytics. And I think another big piece of that is, how do we break out of, you know, traditionally at Tableau and everywhere else, analytics has been more of like a destination where it's like, I'm going to go do some analysis. And so I'm going into Tableau or Power BI or Looker or wherever, and I'm going to find the right dashboard and I'm going to do some work, and then I'm going to go somewhere else to do it. And now with agents, we can do a lot more of, hey, we're embedding the analytics where you work already. And so if you're a sales rep and you've got a, you're looking at an opportunity page because you've got a meeting with this client, how can the agent surface analytics for you right then about what products they're most likely to buy and concerns they're likely to have and how they're, you know, how similar customers like them are finding value. And we can surface all of that like right in the flow of work. And so it's not, it shifts it away from being this thing you have to go do before you do your real job to while you're doing your job, the agent is able to put analytics in front of you. And that's a piece that all of that is super exciting. We're pushing hard on that. The other, and that's in service of, you know, human users. The other piece that I think is going to be really important is, as we think about agents doing more and more work and more work within an organization, we also have to make sure that those agents are analytically informed and they're making good decisions based on data. And that's the same data that people are using, and everybody's seeing the same numbers and the same, you know, security and governance models and the same data model. And so as we want agents to do more and more work within an organization, we've got this idea of a digital labor platform. They need to be using, they need to have access to the same insights so they can make better decisions and they can do a better job. And that one felt a little far-fetched to me. It's like, oh, now we're talking about how are we giving analytics to the agent? It's like, oh man, you know, back to this kind of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And then I saw a study from Accenture, I think they published like 2 weeks ago, that they said by 2030, agents will be the primary users of enterprise software. Like, wow. And so if we believe that, and I do, because I've seen the success our customers are starting to have with agents, I see all the energy around agents. Mm-hmm. That seems very plausible to me. And so it's like, if that's the case, then like, we really got to make sure that they're analytically informed, right? We need to give it like a virtual analyst to all these virtual agents. And I think that's the other really critical piece of when we think about agentic AI. It's, you know, we're serving people. That's our core constituency is human users. That's who we get out of bed for. That's who we're building this for. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be more and more agents doing more and more work and having more and more autonomy and control and be able and their impact on an organization. But we got to make sure all those things are really smart and making decisions based off the data too.
Interesting outlook here. But how do we do that now? How do we do that? And let's talk about both areas you mentioned. The first one, because let's say embedding analytics is not really new. I mean, we all do that for a long time. Is it now that we have more this conversational experience, or what are the important parts of the, let's say, agentic analytics, as you called it, when we embed that or when we use that?
So you're totally right. As you know, Karsten, that, you know, the ability to stick a line chart in a web page or in an opportunity page or whatever has been around for a long time. It's not just like sticking it there. It's putting something there that actually has intelligence. And I think that matters in a couple ways. One is you can get the conversational experience that you were talking about. There's probably a lot of folks listening to this podcast. They can look at a line chart and kind of know what to do with it. And they can look at a complicated line chart and know how to read that. And that is not true for many, many people. Typically 70% of an organization is what we call business users. They want to be smart. They want to do a good job. They want to be informed by the data. But it's not where their head is at. It's not where their skill's at. And it's not their day job. They're trying to close deals or get people hired or build cool products or fix bugs. It's not to kind of spend time in the analysis. And so the more the more we can have that be an experience where you can ask questions about it, and you can ask questions from anywhere. You can be on Slack, or, you know, eventually you'll be able to be on a conversation like this. So we'll have a little agent and we can ask questions of that to help inform this podcast. So part of it is really infusing it as an intelligent thing, not just, an image or an image that you can scrub or put kind of filters on. That's a big piece of it. And then the other piece is what the agent can either do or recommend that you do. And this is one of the things that's really nice about working at Salesforce is we have all Sales Cloud, Service Cloud, Marketing Cloud. Like, we have all the places where you do work, and we have Slack. And so it's not just, here's a line chart. Hopefully you can figure out what it says. Hopefully you can figure out what you can do about it. It's, here's the insight, the agent, based on what it knows about you and your calendar and the questions you typically ask and what's going on in the data. Here's what it thinks is most important for you. You can ask questions, you can follow up, and then here's what it recommends you do about it. And, you know, the human is going to stay at the helm. They'll be in control. But having recommendations of, you know, for like the marketing, optimize your marketing campaign, it's not just going to tell you what to do. It'll give you an option to click this button, and we'll start moving these campaigns over, or we'll start shifting your investments. And actually being able to, you know, impact the world in that way, I think, is a really critical piece that's been missing, even when we could stick visualizations in different places.
Yeah, I agree.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Then maybe the second area you mentioned, yeah, you said agents need to be well informed. So how do we do that now? Or where do you see the differences to informing humans?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for a big piece of our strategy, and I think you're hearing this word more and more, of a semantic layer. And we're making big investments there. A lot of the cloud warehouses, Databricks and Snowflake, they're starting to add semantic layers on top. So they're kind of coming up as we're coming down, and we're sort of meeting at the semantic layer middle. But I think the semantic layer is really critical for that. And, you know, I'm sure people have heard this idea, again, has been around for a long time. A lot of customers I talk to, and, you know, essentially it's sort of an abstraction over the underlying data. It's a way to represent at a higher level what the data is, what it means to the business, without needing to get into the nitty gritty of here's all the joins. Like, that has to be configured. But when you're consuming from the semantic layer, you don't have to worry about the really kind of messy table structure underneath. And I've talked to a lot of customers that have had this as like a plan for a long time. It's like the thing that never quite makes the cut in their like yearly planning of like, oh, we should get onto that. And, you know, some people have data catalogs when there's work in that space. I think it's always been kind of a nice to have. Like, everybody wants their data to be better organized. Everybody wants it to be easier to, you know, self-discover data or to onboard new analysts because things are neat and maintained and labeled properly. But it's been kind of a nice to have. But what we're seeing now is with agents is there is so much context and sort of institutional knowledge and jargon and gotchas that is in analysts' heads and in people's heads. And it's sort of diffused, and you've been there for a while. And so you know that AE means advertising executive and not account executive. And you know, when you're looking at salespeople in your org, you really care most about total pipeline, the number of deals is as important as how much they brought in, or maybe it's close rate. And that's the thing that's most important in your org. And people know that, but it's been trapped in people's heads. And that's been okay, because it's people doing all the work, right? And so the CEO slacks the analyst and mentions AE, and the analyst knows what that is and can answer correctly. What we're seeing now is we want agents to be able to do that. And what that means is there needs to be a place to basically write down that information and get it out of people's heads and get it into a database where it can be stored and can be used by the agents. And so that's a big piece of the value of what the semantic layer brings, and is it ends up being the kind of translation point between how your business users think about data and how the database thinks about data. There's that semantic layer in the middle with the business context and the synonyms and the acronyms and knowledge of the underlying table structure that nobody upstream has to worry about. And so it ends up being this really critical focal point for how do you make sure that the agent has access to the data and the context it needs to do a good job and to understand genuine natural language questions that people are asking, not sort of expecting them to type in SQL statements in English. It's like, no, fire off. Like, who was our top AE last year? Is a really hard question, but when you have a lot of context in the semantic layer, agents can do a good job answering it.
Listen, Big Data and AI World is coming up again. On the 4th and 5th of June in Frankfurt, we'll have four stages full of presentations and lots of technology providers showcasing the latest and greatest. So this is a great opportunity to get an update how AI is influencing data and analytics. We'll get more productive with it. We have new user interfaces. We'll see how AI is taking data and analytics to the next level. And that's best seen live in person. And Big Data and AI World in Frankfurt on the 4th and 5th of June is the best place to do that. I will be there too. And I always appreciate if you, dear listeners, stop by, have a quick chat. Let me know what's on your mind. What are your latest projects? What is your wish list for this podcast? Everything can be discussed. Looking forward to see you there. Now, the next question would be, what do I have to do as an enterprise or people in data and analytics to make that happen? I'm just starting to think about, okay, for example, if I look at reports and dashboards, often there's a lot of business logic in there and the way KPIs are defined, for example, and calculations and so on. So would we have to change the way of working then and really make sure that this is then in a semantic layer and not in a reporting tool, for example?
Yeah, that's a big part of the shift that some of our customers have started making is they've used some of our tools like Pulse and stuff that came out last year. But in general, that for a lot of good reasons or understandable reasons, we've ended up in a world where there's a lot of semantics that are kind of trapped right at the edge of the graph, right? Like you're saying, so it's that KPI is not defined anywhere except in that report, and that's happened for a variety of reasons. We want to be able to move quickly. You don't want to get bogged down with central governance, all this kind of stuff. But what it means then is it's really hard for the agent to use that KPI. And so part of what we're coaching customers through, and we're also building agents that will help with this, and other people are as well. But how do you really centralize those semantics? And you want to have basically what we're moving towards is things like dashboards, things like reports. Those are going to be primarily created by agents based on a rich semantic layer and based on knowing what's important to the user. So it's going to be the investment in where analysts are spending their time is going to shift towards. It's more and more around data organization, data curation, this idea we have of like coaching the agent, which is some of that. Like, here's what this acronym means. Here's what a great answer to this question would be. This is better than the agent did, but now the agent can learn from the analyst and say, oh, okay, next time I'll include that breakdown by region because I know that's valuable because the analyst told me that. So the work of the analyst is going to become more centralized and sort of building out that central source of semantics. And then the reports and dashboards will kind of come for free when we have that rich model in the middle. And so I think, for customers who want to get started, one, playing with agents and stuff just on your own is like a great way to kind of get your head around what these things can do. But I think organizationally, it's going to be starting to think about shifting towards that more centralized semantic model that has a lot of richness, that is a single source of truth for all your data, can span across, you want to make sure you can connect your sales data with your service data, with your marketing data, so you can tell that full 360 story. But really pulling that together and investing less on the edges of dashboards and reports.
Technically, how does that look like? Will that be separate tools? Will that be integrated with other things? How will we build these semantics layers?
Yeah, so at least our approach is it's very integrated. So you can do this today in Tableau with like published data sources. It's not as rich of a semantic layer as the one we're building now. Initially, like sort of when Tableau first came out, there was a lot of semantics that were like right in the workbook or right in the worksheet, right? And that's where things were being calculated. For a while, we've been encouraging people to like, no, pull that logic into the published data source. And so which is all, within Tableau. With this new version of Tableau Next, the semantic layer is all integrated. What we found is that to actually build the semantic layer well and to do the data modeling right takes a lot of iteration and a lot of sort of exploration of the data. It's not a thing you just think hard about and then go type a bunch of stuff in. It's you bring in some data, you build a lightweight viz, you're like, that number is way too high. Oh, okay, I need to do some dedupe here. Okay, oh, that join is wrong. That's why that's wonky. it's this very kind of cyclical process. And so keeping that in one place is really important for, you know, staying in that flow and to be able to actually get that done and not, you update the semantic layer and you wait 5 minutes for it to sync to this other tool. And then you see something looks wrong and you go back and futz with it. It's like, it's a painful process when it's separate. And so our approach, at least, is to keep it really within one experience, because again, what we found is it's a very iterative process. It's not a linear cycle where first you build the semantic model and then you get visualizations from it. It's much more of a loop of refinement. And so keeping it tight and in one experience is really important.
All right. We're already approaching the end of our time here, unfortunately, because I mean, this is a super interesting topic. We could talk way longer about that. But anyway, maybe to end this, let's take a look into the future. So where do you think are things going right now? Or what do you expect for the next, it's called years, how will things evolve here?
Yeah, so one thing that's really important to me is like we talked about at the beginning, you know, OpenAI just released their 4.5 model yesterday, I think. Amazon's doing a bunch of stuff, DeepSeek, Alexa, Meta, Microsoft, everybody's in there. And a lot of the thing I want people to understand is like, those are awesome, but they know very little about you, right? And so, and that's kind of one of the challenges. They don't know your credit card. They don't know the stuff you care about. They definitely don't know your data. They don't know your calendar. There's a bunch of these things that they don't have access to, which limits how useful they are. And they're working on that. But what the approach we're taking with analytics and with Agentforce in general is we want all those amazing capabilities that are coming out. We want all of that to work in your organization. And so if you ask, you know, ChatGPT, how much money I made last week, I think it'll say, I have no idea. It might, you know, a year ago would have said, last week you made $100. Could just kind of hallucinate something. But like that'll be grounded in your data. And as we keep seeing amazing new capabilities coming out of, you know, deep research is a big focus now. It's like, oh, it does this stuff. That'll work on your data. And some of that's data. Some of that is your org's best practices. Some of that is your help documentation. Some of that's your, you know, support docs and FAQs. But all of the grounding that you have and data you have as an organization, that plus all of the amazing stuff coming from all the people who were in the AI labs and the foundational models, those are going to like line up this year and stay lined up. And so as you see cool demos coming or trying new things on your phone or you're doing image gen, that'll all work on your data and you're talking to it, like that'll work with your org. And for me, that's super exciting because I'm really pumped about all the capabilities coming out and I use them in my personal life all the time. ChatGPT is spitting out recipes for me every day and I'm cooking for dinner. It works great for that. Mm-hmm. And then I come into the office and it's like, oh, you know, now it's like, hey, I'm in Slack and I'm looking for that message I can't find and I can't find that email and audio is messed up on our call. There's all these like kind of real world things that come up with work and they can feel very disparate, right? Where some of it feels like we're living 50 years in the future and some of it feels like we're living as we've been living for the last 15 years. No. And those with agents and you know, the stuff we're doing with Agentforce and other people are obviously working on similar things. Those are going to line up. And I think that's going to be a really exciting time to have these amazing capabilities, but have it working on your data in a way that your security team is okay with and your lawyers are okay with and your data admins are okay with because it respects the governance model and it respects all of that. I think that's really important and really exciting. And the idea of sort of being able to hitch like the work experience wagon to these very fast AI horses is like, oh, like that's going to be great. And I think this will be the year where that happens. And I think we'll really start to feel the transformations in how we work starting this year. And that's just going to accelerate more and more. And, you know, we've got agents in all of our Slack conversations now as we're dog fooding some of the stuff in at Salesforce. And it's like, I'm starting to feel the shift. And I think a lot of people are. And I think this year is my sort of metaphor for this year is it's like on a roller coaster and it's, when it gets to the top and it's like you hear the ticking slow and you know you're about to do that part of the curve, like this is where we are right now. And it's very slow ticking and you can kind of see it coming. And I think that's going to be super impactful this year and probably every year after that too. We'll see where the roller coaster, if and when the roller coaster stops. But
all right. I think roller coaster is a good metaphor here. But thanks so much. It was really fascinating insight into the future of analytics, I would say. with the agents and everything happening around that. Nate, thanks so much for sharing your experience, your opinion, and your insights here. And I wish you all the best for your future work in this regard, and hope to see you soon again. Bye-bye.
Awesome. That sounds great. Thanks, Carsten. Thanks, everybody.